Obama wants you to toss that rented cable box. A fleet of self-driving cars full of bots. And Sam Moskovich is here to show us how to hack our HTC Vive to play Oculus games. All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1493, recorded Friday, April 15th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/TNT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/TNT.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
Hello, and welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about all the tech news, or all the tech news that we decide is worth talking about.
Every piece. And like 20 or 30 stories today, all of them.
Mm-hmm. And we talk about it with people who love technology.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes by ourselves.
Sometimes, yes. We got some people who love technology today. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. We don't have a full episode guest today, but that's okay because we've got not one, but two Sams.
Yep.
It's the Battle of the Sams on today's episode. Mm-hmm. That's all coming up a little bit later,
The show where we talk to people named Sam about technology.
Today. We'll see how this goes. It might be a recurring thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get started. The Washington Post says Obama is asking federal regulators to stop cable companies from forcing us to rent their lame old cable boxes. Harkening back to the phone monopolies of the 80s, cable companies have ruled with their old-fashioned set-top boxes for long enough, says the president. And it's time for the Federal Communications Commission to change the rules. We've talked on this show about the proposal that's in front of the SEC right now. This is an interesting twist because Obama is really expressing his support for changes. In addition to the private letter, the White House also posted on their blog. And Obama also gave an interview to Yahoo Finance, criticizing the closed cable set-top box system. We talked before the show and we said, well, you know, there's not a lot to discuss because we agree. Yes, change it.
We agree. Yes, do that. I mean, the fact of the matter is, like, these cable boxes, like a stereo system in your cabinet or like a VCR before it or whatever, these are things that you end up holding on to for years. It doesn't make any sense to have to, like, rent this equipment, other than the fact that the cable companies have made a lot of money by requiring you to rent such things. So change couldn't come soon enough. It should be noted that this is not the first time that this sort of thing has happened. Everybody remembers, usually by flinching a little bit when they talk about it, but cable card was supposed to kind of be a solution here too. That was, you know, late 1990s, early 2000s. They were expensive, really difficult to find. Basically, it was almost like, you know, the cable companies were forced to include compatibility for cable card, but there were so many hurdles, so many obstacles that it pretty much killed that effort entirely. And that was, you know, that was the FCC that kind of forced that upon cable companies. So I suppose hoping this time we end up with a better solution.
Yeah, I mean, you said that, you know, it couldn't come too soon, but I think it's too late. I mean, I gave up my cable. It's been a decade since I haven't had a cable box, and I do not miss it at all. Google, Amazon, Apple all supporting this because they have other options. So, yeah.
Of course they are, because there's so many streams. And that's the big difference right here, right, is that video over the internet is a much different world now than it was in the late 1990s, let's say. It's, you know, the infrastructure it's a lot more affordable. Everybody has, you know, so many people have it. So it's just a different world now. It makes way more sense, even more sense, let's say, now than it did back then. But yeah, how many years worth of bills of $15 rental fees have I paid for boxes like this when it, you know, I would have gladly just paid up front and be done with it because you have these things for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So bravo for that. All right, when product support hits a brick wall, It can mean that the unsupported product becomes a security concern. We hear stories about that all the time, such as the case with Apple's QuickTime for Windows. Apple is deprecating support and will cease any security updates for patching flaws with the software. Apple goes so far as to advise Windows users to uninstall the app to stay safe from hacks. Considering that Trend Micro found two critical flaws with QuickTime for Windows, that advice should be heeded, I'd say, pretty much right away. It does not sound like when Apple is telling you to uninstall QuickTime for Windows from your computer because it might be vulnerable to security issues and that they're not planning at all on updating it, it's probably time to get rid of QuickTime for Windows.
I'm shocked people are still using QuickTime for Windows or QuickTime at all. That's all I have to say about this. People still use QuickTime? Why?
It's a media player. And actually, you know, I actually used QuickTime a lot for conversion, for an easy, like, oh, it's already installed. I can convert from, you know, this dot move to a different format or whatever. But I mean, yeah, now do I? I mean, on Mac, I think everything opens up in preview and I'm perfectly fine with that as opposed to opening up a separate app like QuickTime. So I guess you're right. Why are we still doing this to ourselves? There you go.
Well, we have some positive news from Amazon. The Seattle Times says the tech giant is allowing 200 families to take temporary shelter in one of the buildings the company recently bought. Amazon says they're working with a local nonprofit dedicated to helping homeless women and their families to house the families in the 4,500 square foot building the company had purchased. They were not planning on using it until next year. According to a recent count, more than 4,500 people currently sleep on the streets of Seattle. The situation is so dire, the mayor of Seattle has issued a state of emergency.
Wow.
So the building was a former travel lodge. You can see if you're watching the video. So it's kind of already set up for people to stay. I think this is wonderful. I always, you know, you walk down the streets of San Francisco and you see all these giant buildings. I remember it in 2001, too, after the dot-com crash, like all these giant buildings just empty and people sleeping on the street. It's sad. So I applaud Amazon for doing this.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of took the words right out of my mouth. Amazon is kind of stepping up in Seattle at a very important time of need, obviously. This is a big issue in Seattle right now. San Francisco tech companies could kind of take a page from their book and, you know, instead of complaining on Medium about homeless people. That was one incident that we talked about, I think, a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
We know that they are flush with money, mm-hmm. you know, and in many cases, and we've heard even, I think it was about Google, in many cases, they have so much of this money and they're looking for ways to spend it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have so much that they need to kind of continue spending it on projects, on things. And this is obviously an interesting and very positive way to do that. It's not like they bought the building just to do this, but the project is delayed. And so instead of having it sit empty, they'll do this. So I don't know if that's like, you know, a case for telling Google, hey, why don't you buy up some buildings and then, you know, do this with them? Maybe that's not necessarily, you know, the recommendation here, but it's nice to see. And I don't know, the Bay Area could benefit from this too.
Yeah. And especially good that it's for families. I mean, in Petaluma, yeah. We had this issue because we had a separate homeless shelter for families and then just single people. And then even in Petaluma, like when we, you know, when things got rough, they had to close down one of the homeless shelters and everybody had to move in together. It's not the greatest situation to have families living with single homeless people. It's really much easier for families to live in separate places. So this is great that it is for families. And, you know, it should be noted that Amazon has not been great in the Seattle community in the past. So this is good. They reported last year that Microsoft, I think, had given $4 million last year in corporate donations. And Amazon's corporate donation was $0 last year. Mm-hmm. So that was in local Seattle. So I know, mm-hmm. I'm sure the company does other things, but they have been criticized for not being charitable. So
sure.
Good on them.
Yeah, and the fact that it's a travel lodge, like that's like the most perfect scenario possible. It's already mm-hmm. kind of set up for it. Reserved for families with children, as you said, and their pets. So their pets get to come along too.
Important.
A paper published by researchers at Cornell Tech confirms what many of us already knew, but it never hurts to remind a little bit. URL shorteners are not safe for private sharing. They demonstrated how easily a shortened URL can be brute forced, that is, guest in a systematic, orderly fashion. Since every shortened URL is comprised of far less characters than a full URL usually, it's much easier for systems to kind of process millions of combinations until they happen to find something valuable, something in many cases that was never intended for the public eye. You know, a lot of times with like when talking about like Google Docs, for example, it's a private doc, let's say, but to make sharing of that easier, you make it unlisted, which essentially means anyone who has the direct link that's really long, that really, you know, someone would only come up with, across that link if somebody else gave it to them. It's just that long, right? Well, you shorten that and you give it to someone, and someone brute forces or figures out, you know, the right combination of five characters. They have access to that. And in some cases, they can edit that. And that actually leads to things like malware and that sort of stuff, the capability of someone to kind of go into something that's editable and completely change it for the worse.
Yeah, when I first looked at this story, I thought, well, doesn't everyone know that URL shorteners, you know, are dangerous and not so great anymore? But then, yeah, when you convinced me, I looked into this story. I sent myself a URL today from my computer to my phone, which was directions to a yoga class I wanted to go to. Mm. And, you know, it was a little short URL. And so, you know, what you pointed out is that has directions from my home to a place I was going to. Like, obviously, I'm telling everyone on this podcast that I went to a yoga class. It's not something I'm trying to hide. I would like not
yoga?
Everyone.
Wait a minute. Yoga?
I maybe wouldn't want everyone to know the starting point of that URL.
Right. Yeah, that's
contained in there. You know, what if, you know, you're basically being tracked by these short URLs? If it says the location and where you're going, if it's someplace that you don't necessarily want people to know right. where you're going, mm-hmm. that's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of a million ways, you know, why that might be the case. Your home address, destinations like clinics, addiction facilities, you know, really, you can use your imagination and come up with it. I think the point that you're making is one that I hadn't really thought about until right now, and that's an awesome point, is that there are a lot of services that we rely on that aren't URL shorteners specifically, but they utilize them just by using them. Mm-hmm. Things like, for example, what
yeah,
you're talking
Google
about,
from
sending
PC
from your
phone.
Computer to your phone or sharing this from one device to another, whatever. I mean, to make that easier, they end up, you know, often using these URL shorteners just by default. And so you might not necessarily consider, you know, that aspect when you're sharing to and from using those services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, OneDrive was using, you know, URL shorteners for your personal files, for your photos, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
And now they're not using it at all. Google actually was also, so basically both Google and Microsoft were contacted by the researchers middle of last year-ish, right around there. Google almost immediately broadened the number of randomized characters up to 11 or 12, I think, from a much shorter one prior. Microsoft just basically got rid of the capability of sending via shortened URL entirely. So that's one way to mitigate that risk.
Mm-hmm. So what if you aren't one of the many lucky people out there, lucky enough to own an Oculus Rift and an HTC Vive? You can play Steam VR games on your Oculus headset, but you can't play Oculus games on your Vive. Or can you? Mm. Our gaming correspondent, Sam Moscovich, says you can. He's here to tell us about it. Welcome, Sam.
Hello, hello. It's true. It is true. You could absolutely now play the games from one headset onto the other. The Genesis/Nintendo-style battle of two giant virtual reality rigs for computers rages loudly as of this week.
How? How can you do it?
Oh, so the way it works, there's just a little patch, because essentially all that these virtual reality headsets are doing is reporting your X, Y, and Z axis of where your head is. The Vive goes one further and has those little hand controllers, but for Oculus games, you're just using a gamepad. That's a lot less data. So the idea is a guy looks in and sees, oh, it's sending this sort of specific headset XYZ three-dimensional data to the computer. I'm going to grab that and have that sent in such a way that Steam's OpenVR protocol can pick that up. So once that was put out there, I saw the files, went and grabbed them, and tested out a couple of Oculus releases on my HTC Vive headset. And sure enough, they worked really well. So well, in fact, that they fit into the HTC Vive system in a way where you could see those little blue grid lines that are exclusive to the Vive. The Vive, as we've talked about, is the one where you can walk around the room, almost run into your cat, things like that, with those little hand controllers. I hope my connection's okay. I swear I turned off all of my terrible background processes. what happened was the guy who did this said he only did it for the releases that Oculus has put out for free. Now, if you decide on a whim, oh, I might want to buy an Oculus, you can go right now, sign up for an Oculus account, and get the free, there's a game called Lucky's Tale, which is a full-fledged platformer. It's pretty long. It's very solid. And I think Oculus is giving that away because they assumed in the past you would need the Oculus headset in order to run it. That's not the case now. So now people, if they for any reason have to have spent, you know, $800 for an HTC Vive, they've just lucked into at least a little extra accidental Oculus bonus in the form of that game for free, along with a couple of other cinematic demo apps.
That is really cool. So so obviously the Oculus Rift at release does not have the motion controllers. The HTC Vive does. Does this enable on some of those Oculus games that should, I mean, does this enable extra functionality inside them that you don't get on the Oculus version when you're playing
this
it inside the Vive?
Not at all. No, as of right now, if you want to play an Oculus game within the Vive, it's telling you, sit down, grab an Xbox-styled controller. You're not going to have that hand stuff. You're not going to be able to walk around. Right. The best you can do is if you decide to relocate in your little virtual space that you'll have the little blue grid lines that warn you if you're about to run into a wall or a cat. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it's just a chance at this point. You also do need to have specific controllers depending on the game. I found that the Xbox 360 controller that I have that plugs into a computer sometimes didn't work. So clearly this is not this incredibly polished way to play Oculus games. Actually, Oculus gave us a statement after this report went live saying that they don't condone what happened. They're calling it a hack, and they're saying that if you do run this little patch, that they can't promise that your game will work as properly designed in the future. And the hack was the patch, as I like to call it a patch, not a hack so much, but the patch that was released was designed for games that are offline specific. So my guess is you can actually currently take these patches and apply them to any game that's come out on the Oculus Store. The reason being, they don't target the game, they target the engine, the 3D kind of rendering stuff that's beneath it. And the Unreal Engine and the Unity Engine are the most popular ones, and they're used for pretty much everything in the Oculus Store. So you can take whatever game or app you purchased, run it through the representative patch, and it should work. But I haven't tested that with any online games. And I'll be curious to see if there's a cat and mouse game that comes from here on out, whether Oculus is going to go and sneakily go in and take this out. Because it sounds like the reason that this all stuff didn't all work in the first place was because of licensing negotiations between the Oculus people and the Steam, HTC, Valve side of things in terms of these storefronts running in different ways. Remember, Oculus has a little background process that runs at all times. If you want to run any Oculus games, it runs a little blah, blah, blah server.exe. It just sits there in the background on your computer if you're an Oculus Rift user, whether or not you're using the Oculus. So I wouldn't be shocked if there was something about that requirement that the Valve and Steam side said, you know what, we don't want any of that required for use of our games. That's too obtrusive for us. But nobody's really speaking out specifically as to why they haven't, both PC sides haven't, you know, shaken hands and worked this out. So in the meantime, we've got some cat and mouse coming. I'm going to keep my eyes out on how these patches play out. Because I do think it's cool to own only one headset and be able to play stuff on both. Mm-hmm. And eventually Oculus will come out with their own little hand track controllers. And it would be super interesting if that worked the other way around. If you could be an Oculus only owner and jump into the HTC Vive selection of apps and games and all that. But, you know, there's so much about VR that's unproven already. We're only a few weeks into these things being in people's hands. And, you know, they're not really shipping that quickly anyway. So this is a very early going thing. But it is interesting that even in spite of these early days, someone's already said, you know what, don't tell me what the limit is. I'm going to go and make a patch.
Mm-hmm. So is there any danger to your Vive, do you think, by installing these patches?
Not at all. There's all they're doing is just sending a 3D game to a completely different kind of headset. They're rendering the exact same resolution. So there's not even a possibility that would somehow strain or burn or do anything weird to the LCD system. Because they use the same resolution, there couldn't be even the slightest bit of warranty harm. And in fact, Oculus didn't even go so far as to make that sort of claim, which is good, because that would have been laughable if they tried to say that this would have set your HTC Vive on fire. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fine, except it might just burn your eyes out.
It's mostly an issue of if the patch breaks and then you update it, then there could be some corruption in the updating process, and you may have broken a end user license agreement by doing this, but right. I'm not so sure. They didn't go so far as saying that. They're just like, this is a hack, we don't condone it. So of all the corporate speak they could have chosen, they were pretty straightforward and simple about it, which I appreciate at any length.
Yeah, they could have come out and said, well, you just broke your warranty, or figured in some sort of language to that degree. So
yeah.
So you said there's going to be a cat and mouse, so you don't really know if this will continue to work. But at this point, would you say if someone was trying to decide between the two, this is enough to sway one way to the HTC Vive over the Oculus Rift?
I wasn't lucky enough to get both headsets. I've only gotten the Vive. There's other staffers at Ars Technica who have both headsets. And I love it. I love the fact that I only need one, because really they're essentially as the headsets are doing the same thing. And I think it'd be really great for virtual reality in general, for someone to be able to just get one. And then if I have the HTC guy and I want to pay Oculus for some of its games, I think that'd be great. I think everyone would make some money and this stuff would all keep rolling. Let's not forget, in maybe a year, year and a half, these could all be considered, antiquated. Mm-hmm. I may dump the Vive for the Oculus 2.0 and want to keep all my stuff. I don't want to feel like I have to buy a Sony TV because my Vizio TV is not being supported. And I think headset owners are going to feel the same way. But again, early days, maybe stuff will get unlocked. Maybe licensing agreements will be worked out. But for now, I'm playing Lucky's Tale for free, which is cool. It's a cool little cute platformer with a little fox running around jumping on little creatures. So that's fun by my standards.
Well, real quick, before we go, I'm considering seeing The Jungle Book, and you have a review. So thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Speaking of cute little critters, I think that this is pretty incredible what Jon Favreau has pulled off, because he's, you can sort of see in the movie, I caught it earlier this week, and I found there were these little Favreauian moments where there would be cute little critters that would pop up in a scene that our beloved man cub Mowgli is walking through, and they would chatter and chirp with little comments in these ways that actually fit into a more serious and darker Jungle Book. It was a very interesting marriage, I think, of light and dark, of family-friendly and brutal jungle life and animal conflict. I'm really shocked at how, in general, family-friendly / dark and intense this movie turns out to be. This is sort of like Elf and Iron Man meeting halfway with incredible CGI. I cannot say enough how wonderful the animation is on these animals. This is not some Dr. Doolittle overwrought, mouths moving really weirdly.
Yeah.
It's not, just like peanut butter in a bear's mouth to simulate talking. It's found this sort of middle ground. I was really impressed at sort of the animation speed. You'll see these animals move and sway and walk in these ways that is both believable, but also when they start talking out loud, you go, okay, I can understand. It's very finely tuned, and the nitpicker in me watched this movie with a notepad looking for stuff to be mad about, and I really didn't find it, other than the simians, the chimpanzees. The King Louis sequence that's in there is awful, just awful. Just that would be, if you need to go for a pee break as soon as you hear Christopher Walken start talking, just, go get some juju beans or whatever it is you need to do. But beyond that, really good family friendly. It's the most intense stuff, if you have family, if you have kids, is there's some, I would say, National Geographic level kind of violence between these animals, and the animals look realistic. So if you're worried about a 4 or 5 year old, reacting to a jump scare or something like that, that might be pushing it. But once your kid's sort of in early elementary school, I think that'll be fine. I think it doesn't condescend. It doesn't talk down to kids. It feels really good. Mowgli's the kid who plays Mowgli is, overeager and chirpy, and that fits for the role. Bill Murray's incredible playing, lazy, kind of a jerk Baloo. Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson?
Kind of flat, but I wouldn't say that her scene is so brief as the snake caw that I didn't even bother mentioning it in the review because it just seemed like a dumb thing to waste time reviewing. Her spot fits in just fine. She's in, she's out. It's fine. But it's really, Baloo and Bagheera as the facing off against each other is sort of the same conflict that was in the animated Jungle Book from 1967. And I thought that was retained, but also freshened up. And anyway, I liked it a lot. Go check it out.
Awesome. Well, Mario, who works behind the camera, also gave it 2 thumbs up. So
yes, he's been shaking his head yes furiously as you've been talking about it.
Well, Sam, thank you as always. Sam Moscovich, culture editor at Ars Technica at Sam Red on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Sam.
Have a good weekend. Bye, guys.
All right, you too.
Take care. After the break, an army of bots is hitting the road. But first, let's take a minute to thank Wealthfront, the sponsor of this episode. Now, let's say you want to be one of those lucky people who own an Oculus Rift and an HTC Vive. One way to do that is to learn how to invest your money the smart way so you can afford all that hardware. But trying to do it yourself, invest that is complex and time consuming. You want to spend your time in VR, not checking the stock market all the time. Lucky for you, there's Wealthfront. Traditional advisors charge huge fees between 1% and 3% of what they manage. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points, 0 commissions and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. There are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. Wealthfront's new portfolio review, you can see if your portfolio is at risk, how diversified your investments are, what you're losing to fees, even minimize your taxes. You can get started investing today with as little as $500. It only takes a few minutes to sign up at Wealthfront.com, and it goes right to work monitoring your portfolios around the clock and taking action as soon as an opportunity arises. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view and track all your accounts in one place. And now Wealthfront can track both your Wealthfront and your non-Wealthfront bank and brokerage accounts. And they will provide in a summary of all your assets. You can also see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. Wealthfront's process is based on Nobel Prize-winning academic research and the best investment practices. We've heard from many of you who have used Wealthfront and love how you can diversify your portfolio and buy stocks from in-demand companies like the ones we've already talked about on the show, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook, all commission-free. Wealthfront manages over $2.6 billion in client assets, and it's growing rapidly every day. What are you waiting for? Start investing for your future crazily expensive VR goggles today with Wealthfront. Visit Wealthfront.com/TNT to sign up and get your free personalized investment portfolio. You'll see the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for Twit listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many Twit fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront. Claim your offer today at Wealthfront.com/TNT.
All right, the bots are coming for our cars. That's a good thing, actually. Sam Abulsamid from Navigant Research is here to make sure you aren't afraid of the future. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, Jason and Megan. Great to be on again.
It is great to have you back, as always. So first things first, what could a bot-enabled car do that we can't do kind of right now with the technology in our cars?
Well, the article I wrote kind of took off on some things that Paul Thurrott was talking about on Windows Weekly a couple weeks ago after the Build conference when Microsoft made their big announcement about their bot framework that they were releasing. And he was talking about, you know, what bots can do in the background without any human intervention. So it goes way beyond the kinds of things that you guys were talking about a couple of days ago after the F8 conference. It's about a lot more than just chatbots. Mm-hmm. So, looking at bots from a more generic standpoint as, basically server apps that are doing things in the background, picking up, each one is dedicated to picking up certain pieces of data from servers and then combining it all together into something useful for you. In the automotive context, what Toyota announced was that they're going to be using Microsoft's bot framework. And they've set up a new division called Toyota Connected Incorporated, and they're going to be developing bots that will provide contextual data while you're driving. That's just the beginning of where this can all go in the long term as we get into autonomous vehicles.
How does this tie into kind of you mentioned in your article mobility as a service? How does this benefit kind of the future of cars from that perspective?
So my colleagues and I just wrote a white paper that will be published imminently about it's a transportation outlook of 2025 to 2050, looking at where we think transportation is going to go over the next 35 years or so. And, you know, you see all these autonomous vehicles being developed now, and we've got connected vehicle technologies being developed, and you've got car sharing and ride hailing services like Zipcar and Uber and Lyft. And what we foresee happening is all of these pieces that are kind of separate right now are going to come together, and the transportation system is going to evolve. You know, I mean, right now, I think as of last year, more than half of the world's population lives in cities, in urban areas. And by 2030, that's going to be about two-thirds of the population, with about 9 billion people total on the planet. And, you know, all that congestion is going to be just totally unmanageable if everybody's trying to drive. And so what we think is going to happen is that all these technologies that are being developed right now, that the ride hailing and autonomous and connected systems, are going to come together. And instead of people in cities owning their cars for the most part, they're probably going to be using shared ride hailing services that when they need to go from one place to another, they'll just summon a ride, and based on what they need, if they're alone or if they're with a larger group, they can get the right kind of vehicle, and they can subscribe to different services. So, for example, if Apple decides to get into the transportation business, you know, they might have a service that has a more premium vehicle as opposed to more basic vehicles from a company like Ford or General Motors. And, you know, they'll charge accordingly. But, you know, to power all of this in the background, you're going to have one of the things that's going to help make this a reality is these bots running in the background. And eventually, you know, in the 2030s, 2040s, you know, we probably won't be using smartphones as we think of them today. We'll have some sort of connected device. But, you know, Jason, you use Google Now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it pops up alerts for you when it's time to go, you know, knows when you go to work and when you go home, and you'll get traffic alerts. Well, maybe not in Petaluma. I don't know how much traffic you guys get there. But all these things, all this information that's being gathered in various locations can all be combined with even more information about traffic flow. You know, so there may be a bot that's looking at your calendar and knows that you're leaving a meeting somewhere and knows that you have another meeting a half hour from now across town. And so as you're leaving your meeting, it will summon a vehicle. And as you step outside the door, a ride will be there for you. You get in, takes you to where you need to go automatically without any intervention. You won't actually have to hail a ride. It'll just happen automatically, all being done by these bots that are aware of what's going on with traffic and what's going on with the weather and where you are, where you need to be in construction zones. So all these things will just happen automatically through these bots.
So your vision is sort of a fleet of on-demand self-driving cars in the cities anyway, and out in the suburbs, we'll all still be driving our Teslas, right? But in the cities, they'll be just come on demand. And then will there be bots that are like chauffeurs that can just say, like, read me my email and, you know, order me food and all those things?
All kinds of services. You know, if you're going somewhere and, you know, you say, hey, I'm hungry, you know, there will probably be a bot that is aware of your preferences for what kind of food you like, and, you know, based on where you are, what you're, you know, knowing, you know, what your budget is and what kind of food you like to eat, it'll look up and find a restaurant that's got a table open and say, you know, do you want to go here? And boom, takes you there and you know, you're all done. So there's all kinds of potential services that could be enabled by this.
I have to imagine that Toyota Connected Inc., which is the subsidiary of Toyota that's kind of exploring this, has plans to implement these things sooner than the kind of future that you're talking about here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, when do we think we're going to start seeing these, and what are the baby steps? Is it literally it's going to take this, you know, bots telling you it's going to take you this long to get to your next, you know, calendar entry, or is it further beyond that, kind of tying into the functions of the car itself?
I think, you know, the near-term applications will be something like what I just described with a restaurant. I mean, right now, you know, in a Toyota vehicle, if you've got their Entune infotainment system, they have Yelp and OpenTable built into that. And so you can tap on that and find, you know, tap on the screen in your car and find a restaurant, you know, that you want to go to. You'd have to go through a few taps and tell it, you know, okay, navigate to this location. What the initial applications of the bots will automate those sorts of functions in the car, so that you're not going to be tapping on the screen so much. You know, you can just, you know, hit the voice recognition button on your the steering wheel, you know, give it one quick command, and then all the sequence of other events will happen. You know, and then it'll say, okay, I'm ready to navigate to La Fiesta Mexicana, or, you know, or to, you know, whatever restaurant you wanted to go to.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, this is all great stuff. Always love having you on, Sam. Sam Abulsamid for Navigant Research. Is it NavigantResearch.com? Sorry, yep. I saw Navigant Search. I'm like, you're not a search company. Tell people a little bit about I don't know, just where they can find your work specifically, because you are one of many writers for Navigant.
Yeah, I'm part of a team of analysts at Navigant that we look at various I'm on the transportation team, and so we focus on transportation technologies like vehicle electrification, autonomous systems, car sharing and ride hailing services, automotive cybersecurity, which is another one of my areas. Sure. So you can find the reports that we do at NavigantResearch.com. You can also find you can just Google my name, and you'll find things that I've written all over the web at various locations, including Forbes and my blog. And if you happen to be in Santa Clara in early May, May 10th, 11th, and 12th, and you're interested in connected cars, I'll be speaking, presenting at the Future Connected Cars USA conference that week.
Excellent. Look for Sam there. Sam, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take care.
All right, so yesterday, you remember we talked about texting in movie theaters.
I remember that, yeah.
It was an offhand comment at an industry conference where the head of AMC Theaters said, maybe we should let people text in theaters because millennials can't possibly get through a whole movie without texting. So that hit a nerve. On Twitter, also hit a nerve. With you all, hit the millennial nerve and the texting and movie theater nerve. We got many comments here, just two. One on Twitter at NerdGirlsVerse says, why are we rewriting theater manners for a generation that is already over catered to? Silence yourself. Also, Mike emailed us to say, I think so-called millennials should either respect the traditions of the movie-going experience or stay at home. As your guest commented, the experience of going to the cinema is meant to be different than that of watching a film at home on your TV and using your phone. Being born in 1983, I supposedly fall into the millennial bracket. Unlike most millennials, though, I seem to have been brought up to respect the tradition and etiquette of going to the cinema, the theater, a restaurant, etc. If a millennial can't go without using their phone for the few hours of watching a movie, they need to step back and reassess their technology dependency. If it were a cigarette or alcohol, they would be considered an addict. Thank you, Mike.
That's a good final point. I mean, and I should point out that we, you know, like Greg, for example, who I suppose falls into that category, he often runs our prompter, you know, after yesterday's show and when the stream was done, he went on for a little bit about just how kind of, you know, how that doesn't line up with his own values and that sort of stuff. And I think the challenge here is, I don't want it to seem like we're coming down by even talking about this on millennials, in air quotes. I think the challenge here is that the folks like, you know, the man leading AMC that was talking yesterday have a perception about millennials, and that, you know, that perception is shaping some of the decisions that they're making. And is that right or wrong? And in this case, I'm not sure that a lot of millennials would even agree with what he's talking about. They probably, you know, in large numbers, you know, kind of respond by saying, oh, no, that sounds ridiculous too. So I don't know if he's misjudged what's going to bring more of that generation into theaters or not. But it's an interesting discussion nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, I don't know if that is what is keeping people out of this.
Yeah, theater. Right. I mean, I don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, we have giant TVs at home. We have virtual reality. Like, there are so many ways to enjoy. I mean, you have to really want to go into the theater, enjoy the theater popcorn, as I hope to do tonight.
Theater popcorn. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of theater popcorn. Mm-hmm. Eat some for me.
I will, and I will not text.
Okay. Yeah, but don't eat some for me, but don't tell me about it, okay?
Okay.
All right, good. Coming up, do you want your skin to be the foundation for light-emitting diodes?
Yes.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. It's ZipRecruiter. If you have a business, you're hiring. Hiring is not easy. Finding the right people is not easy. You might know where you need to post your jobs to find all the right people, but posting those jobs in one place, it's not enough to find quality candidates. And as you know, posting in many places, it takes time. It takes you away from your job running the company. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of those job sites in a time-efficient manner. And now you can at ZipRecruiter.com. You can post to 100-plus job sites. That's including social networks, by the way, like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. They make it super efficient for you, so you don't have to spend your time doing all the other stuff. You can find candidates in any city or industry nationwide, all over the map. Just post one time, and you'll watch your candidates kind of roll into the ZipRecruiter interface. It's super easy to use, easy to understand. It makes browsing for your potential, future hires a breeze. No juggling emails, no calls to your office, all that stuff that just gets in the way. You can screen your candidates quickly, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Just get to that action. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. And right now, you can actually try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Check it out for yourself and see what you think. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Bill Crane, at B Crane on Twitter, who says he watches TNT, quote, on Roku while updating software. Nothing makes that progress bar move faster than a healthy dose of tech news. That's right. That's our new motto. Show us how you... That one's free, Megan.
Okay.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
Well, I have been on a lookout for a new band for my Apple Watch. Uh-huh. But after reading Addie Robertson's column in The Verge today, I've decided to wait because perhaps in the not-so-distant future, I won't need an Apple Watch as I'll be able to embed a digital display right into my hand, or more specifically, right onto my e-skin. Robertson says e-skin is a thing, a real thing. It's an ultra-thin and ultra-stretchy material that can mimic the flexibility of human skin. And researchers in Tokyo have figured out how to add organic polymer light-emitting diodes, or PLEDs, to the ultra-thin and ultra-stretchy material that is e-skin. So you can light up a digital display directly on your hand or on your face.
Okay.
I've left you speechless.
You could. What it reminds me of, like, the skin doesn't actually look like skin. Like, it looks like a kind of a rubbery plastic layer over the skin. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of when I was a kid and I used to put Elmer's glue on my hand and then let it dry. Mm-hmm.
Or like second skin, that stuff when you go hiking and you put on your hiking boots.
Yes.
Yeah, it's wrinkly. I mean, I tweeted about this earlier. Like, I would want Botox for that skin.
This kind of looks gross, yes. You'd have to treat that skin significantly. So apparently exposure to air can kill these light films within hours. The difference here is that they've used a protective layer, a passivation protective layer, as they say, that kind of keeps out oxygen and water vapor. So instead of it lasting for hours, it can ask for days. And I'm thinking you get 3 days of life out of this. It's perfect for Coachella. It's true. They would go nuts at Coachella for this stuff. Are you kidding? Cover their body in light-emitting diodes and dance the night away.
Mm-hmm. Burning Man also.
I'm just jealous because people are going to Coachella right now.
So this technique produces less heat and consumes less power.
That's good. It won't burn your skin.
Yeah. Biohacking is a real thing. Like, people are putting things into their body, putting technology into their body. And kudos to those people.
Patty Robertson, author of this article, is one of those such people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Magnet in her finger.
I do think that at some point, like, it's going to be kind of crazy when we have these lights, like, embedded into our skin, because I think it's going to happen. Maybe we'll have, like, a portable game machine embedded into the palm of our hand or something like that. I don't know.
I don't know either. VR glasses in our eyeballs.
A USB port that taps into our nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All of this is our future.
Great.
Well, you know, already I feel like my cell phone is part of me.
Yeah.
In some ways.
It might as well actually be part of your skin.
I know. I mean, I wish I felt less like it was part of me.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
I hear you. I agree. Mm-hmm. Okay, on that note, next week, Megan and I will be taking the show to Las Vegas. Yeehaw! For NAB, it's the National Association of Broadcasters trade show. We're going to be there. Twit actually has a stage there, and we're going to be doing a lot of coverage from NAB, from the stage, normal shows from the stage, and then a lot of roaming coverage. TNT will be at the Twit stage Monday through Wednesday. So things are going to be a little different. We're going to probably do a little, I mean, we're going to stick to the same format more or less for the show. But if we find some interesting stuff at NAB, we might bring it back to the show to show off. And then, I mean, the rest of the week is normal. We're back here at the studio.
It'll be a little bit like the Antiques Roadshow, but technology.
Talking about the same stuff, a different stage. Mm-hmm. It kind of is the Antiques Roadshow. We should find some news and bring it back. We should find some Microsoft news and bring Microsoft back.
Yes.
And watch as they get themselves into AI trouble right in front of our very eyes. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I can promise you good shows from Vegas.
Yeah. And if you're at NAB, if you are a broadcaster, come find us. Come say hello. Introduce yourself. We'd love to meet you in person.
Yeah. Sounds like a plan. All right. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
Join our Facebook community. We are there. And subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. All the ways to subscribe on whatever device and whatever way you want to watch or listen to, all there. You can also get our newsletter, twit.tv/newsletter. Sign up for that. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell on the Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day of every single week of this year. Initially. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all on Monday. Bye, everyone. Las Vegas!